Chapter 46. Latham to Sutterdam. At Latham, Thalen had been isolated from how the rest of the states dealt with the incipient invasion. As he discovered at the landing at Clear Lake, panic bloomed. Women and children had fled Vigat by the hundreds. Because Jigat lay inland and Clear Lake formed a natural barrier, refugees overloaded the ferry from Trout Landing. Babes wailed while mothers with tense voices scolded small children who strayed too far from their sides. Everyone tried to carry too many heavy cases. Items they decided to toss away littered the ground like strange, multicoloured wildflowers. Thalen pushed his way through the throng. He made it to the ferry just as it shoved off on its reverse trip back to the landing. On the return trip, the ferry sailed nearly empty, the only passengers being men bound for the battle. A stringy older man with an old-fashioned sword, two twin brothers with dark freckles, turned-up noses and big ears of maybe 16 summers, if that. Thalen wondered how their mother let them go. The ferryman would take no fees from any of them. Thalen caught his breath and tried to calm down for a few minutes by watching the rippling water. Then he examined the five books that Granulton had pressed upon him. Orimondo Beliefs, Wirrendale versus Orimondo over the centuries, Basic Battlefield Healing, The Magics of the Magi, and A Leader's Duties. At first, Thalen could not concentrate enough to read, yet worrying just made him more anxious. So he opened Basic Battlefield Healing, which he thought might be the most immediately useful. He predicted he would find the book disturbing, but the information fascinated him.
"More soldiers die of blood loss or infection than their wounds," he read. "Always clean and sharpen the saw before starting an amputation."
Soon he lost himself in the pages, and the lake slipped by. The elderly man tapped his book, handing him a hunk of sausage. Thalen looked up to thank him, but he had already moved on to share his bounty with the twins. Thalen hoped the old-timer would talk to them, because the boys quivered like bunnies. But the old man just silently returned to his seat at the front of the ferry. Sighing, Thalen realised he should go tend to the youngsters. So he marked his page and moved to sit beside them. He learned they had not asked their parents for permission. They had slipped out in the night. They deeply regretted leaving their horses behind, but had decided they could not abscond with their parents' property. They both claimed to be expert shots with the U-bows they carried. Thalen admired the bows and gently brought up the difference between shooting game and shooting armoured Orimondo soldiers. The three of them discussed where they should aim to bring down protectors. Fortunately, from his reading, Thalen knew the strengths and weaknesses of Oro Mail. When the ferry reached Trout Landing, the anxious crowd of even more hundreds of women and children pressing to board the ferry separated Thalen from the twins. If any carriages waited to take passengers south, Thalen had missed them by the time he pushed through the terrified civilians. So he hoisted his rucksack and started tramping up and down the gently rolling hills. On his lonely trudge, anxious thoughts besieged Thalen. What was happening? Had he already missed the battle? The day waned, and he tried to keep his pace. He had walked for a few hours in the gathering darkness when he heard hoofbeats catching up with him. A man in a businessman's wig pulled up beside him.
"Headed towards Sutterdam?" he asked.
"Yes," answered Thalen.
"Climb up behind me," said the stranger.
Riding behind a saddle, while uncomfortable, saved Thalen from hiking the whole distance. Each lost in thoughts of his own mortality, the two men did not talk during the trip. When they got close to the midnight city, the horseman hailed passers-by.
"What word?"
Pointing, a man answered,
"They've been spotted by scouts about 5 leagues southwest."
Thalen had the rider drop him off in the middle of town.
As Thalen slid off, the stranger said, "Let's see that sword you've got strapped to your belt."
He grimaced at the weapon's poor quality and started to reach for one of his own. Phelan forestalled him.
Your fine sword would be wasted on me, sir. Give it to someone who will get the best use out of it.
They clasped hands.
Fare you well, young man, said the horseman.
You too, sir. Thank you for the ride. The stranger could have ridden off, but he paused to say again,
I really hope you make it.
Me too.
And you too,
said Phelan. The horseman touched his hat and nudged his mount.
Obviously, Phelan could not join a battle carrying his rucksack of books and clothes.
Home or Sutterdam Pottery?
The factory lay closer at hand, and he might learn something there.
The factory gate swung to his touch, and he heard voices. Phelan pushed the door open, hallooing. Norling's voice called, Up here! And Phelan ran up the back stairs to find his aunt and his mother fully dressed, but without shoes or caps.
What are you doing here? He shouted aghast. You have to leave the city, both of you, immediately.
Meta had her hands on her hips before he'd gotten two words out.
Wait, you listen here, Middle. Your father and your brothers could not get us to evacuate, so save your breath.
The way we figure, if anyone's hurt, he'll need us to nurse him.
And if the enemy takes the city, they're going to need us to run Sutterdam Pottery. How are they going to get the foodstuffs back to their precious homeland without pots?
Teta Norling broke in, saying,
Look at you two, both as stubborn as Clear Lake is long. All your sons are stubborn, Indy, just like you. Give me a hug, Phelan. I am glad to see you, lad.
Sorry, but glad too. Are you hungry? I've got a little stew warm in the room yonder.
She tottered off. Jorinda hugged him too, fiercely.
Mater, Phelan said in her ear. The soldiers might leave Norling alone, but you... You're too young and pretty. The Oros...
She put her hand over his mouth, and Phelan saw tears start to brim.
I could not go, Middle, she whispered. To think that your brothers or your father might be wounded and calling for me? I know the dangers. It's my choice, and I made it. Why did you not stay in GCAT where you would be out of harm's way? At least one of you would be safer. That would have been a comfort to me. We sent you a letter, but maybe it never arrived. I could not stay away and let others do the fighting in my stead, Phelan replied.
Then you know exactly how we feel, answered Jorinda triumphantly.
Teta Norling came back with the stew.
As Phelan gobbled it down, he asked for news of his brothers and father.
Hake had joined the army 2 moons ago and had been put to good use in the quartermaster's corps. Since Harvin now commanded a division of cavalry, he would be right on the front lines.
Pacer had left to join the troops this very morning. He had no fighting skills, but like many Sutters, he hoped to be useful fetching water or bearing stretchers. Phelan exaggerated, telling his mother and aunt that he'd picked up a little doctoring. He planned to join the healer's tents. As those tents would be away from the main battle, this stratagem eased their minds a bit.
But first, Phelan had to get to the battlefield.
He slipped basic battlefield healing into a satchel, filled a water skin, left the rest of his gear in the annex, and hugged his womenfolk one more time.
Then he slipped out into the dead of night, trying to shake off the image of the tears dripping down his mater's cheeks. The streets of Sutterdam had now fallen eerily quiet.
Phelan pointed himself in the right direction and kept an eye out for any other latecomers. After he crossed Artisan's Bridge, he hit the southern post road. His boots pinched his tired, swollen feet, and he was sorry to find himself solitary once again. He tramped along for an hour, wondering what lay ahead. Out of the misty darkness, a white horse running loose unexpectedly pounded in his direction. Thalen held his arms out, forcing it to halt or run him down.
The poor thing was spooked, its ears pitched way back, and its eyes rolled in terror.
Shh, shh, you're all right. Everything's all right. I'm a friend.
Eventually, the horse allowed him to come closer. A tan saddle blanket identified the mare as belonging to a Vigat regiment. When Thalen squinted in the half-moonlight, he saw dangling reins, blood all over its belly, and one stirrup.
He concluded that her rider had been wounded. Panicking the horse, she sought to flee back to the safety of her stable.
I'm sorry, girl. There's no hiding for us tonight.
Stroking her seemed to provide comfort, and her shaking eased.
Thalen filled his hands with water and offered this to the horse. She sniffed the water, but couldn't drink from his small, leaking container.
See? I mean you no harm. I'll find you water.
You must be thirsty.
Good girl. You can stop trembling now. You're not alone anymore.
With more soft words and strokes, the horse allowed him to mount, and Thalen turned her back in the direction from which he had fled.
The skies let down a gentle drizzle for a while, and then the rain stopped.
Following the well-maintained post road, after 2 leagues he found a stream, watered the mare thoroughly, and washed off the bloodstain that distressed her so.
While he was paused at the stream, a dispatch rider galloped past him, back in the direction of the city.
Thalen would have tried to hail him, for he badly wanted to know what was happening, but the man was moving too fast.
As Thalen and Dawn approached, the noise of a multitude grew distinguishable. Thalen climbed up a steep rise and was rewarded with a full view of the gently sloping field below.
He'd never seen a battlefield before, and he halted, open-mouthed in astonishment.
The lack of trees indicated the field had once been farmed, but this year it lay fallow. A brook cut across it diagonally from southeast to northwest, and a little valley followed the path of the water. Thousands of Oros wearing varied pieces of armour massed at the far end of the clearing on foot or sat on odd oxen-type creatures. Tall, red-plumed helmets marked the officers. Their command occupied a hillock in the middle left of the field. Thalen could make out a clump of plumed helmets, the Oromondo flag of a mountaintop spewing 8 flames, signal bearers and trumpeters.
The Oros vastly outnumbered the Free Staters. But the Free States had companies of archers positioned midway down the incline and faster horse cavalry assembled at the base. Thalen nudged the horse up to a squad of 20 archers situated near the road. He discovered that instead of preparing to fire, the archers were in the midst of a pitched argument with one another. Several men showed fresh blood or bruising above their leather jerkins.
What's going on? Thalen asked generally.
These fucking crossbows! An archer spoke up. At first sight, we were set to pepper the blasted Oros with them, but we found they don't have the range from up here, so we crept down into the woods on the right side over there. See? We got off a few good volleys, but the bolts kept jamming. And then when you fired it, the damn thing bucked back in your face. Men smashed their noses. My pal lost an eye.
Can I see one?
A man standing close by handed him his repeating crossbow. The reloading mechanism turned out to be a wooden box that stacked the quarrels mounted on top of the shaft. Even in his cursory examination, Thalen could tell that the wood had swollen.
I think they got wet, Thalen said.
No shit, genius, interrupted an archer.
Only a few of us brought along our longbows, another one said in a tone of desperation. We're helpless with these. We've tried prying off the top or gouging bigger holes, but
the Oros seem to be waiting, said another archer.
Thalen knew from his books that defensive positions provided more safety. Thus, one of the primary battle tactics was to bait the other side into an offensive charge.
So sure, the Uros would wait. They had little to fear from archers with malfunctioning bows.
One of the men whispered, down there lies death.
Thalen looked across the field. The thousands of Uro pikemen had formed up in squares in the deep middle.
On the sides, more enemy massed on top of their lumbering creatures, with squads of infantry interspersed between them.
Listen, Thalen said urgently. The best plan would be to fall back, return to Sutterdam. Get your own crossbows or your longbows, get anything that works. Destroy the biggest bridges like artisans and hide in the buildings surrounding the smaller ones. You'd wreak havoc when they approached the city.
You could hold them off the bridges for days. Some of the archers shifted uneasily, and the light of hope came into the eyes of the man who sounded most despondent.
But a thick-necked man with an armband who had just rejoined the group approached, asking,
Who are you? And what'd you do upsetting my squad? We obey our orders. Get you gone before I report you.
Listen to me, I beg you.
The squad leader snarled and reached his hand toward his dagger.
Get! You're a troublemaker, a coward.
Thalen urged the mayor to trot a little ways down the hill. He saw that the Free States commanders had divided their horse brigades into three prongs to face the enemy. A standard predictable move, but one that would never work in this desperate situation. Thalen would have ignored the Uros on the right-hand northern side, counting on their oxen being too slow to rush in as reinforcements and trusting that the brook would slow them down. He would have sent his fastest, bravest cavalry to the left, arcing behind the southern arm, flanking them. And he'd have sent the second larger group, as a fist, right into the gap between the lines of pikemen and oxen. His two-strike forces would meet at that knot of Uro commanders to lop off the snake's head. He could almost see the Free States cavalry overrunning the hillock and the Uros scattering in disarray.
Thalen shook himself a little. He was not a general, merely a student. He would never even raised a weapon against a foe. He looked around for the healers' stations and the supply tents. He spied their flags almost behind him in the flat and narrow stream valley. He kicked the horse, intending to ride to the tents. But midway down the hill, he changed his mind and his direction. This trained cavalry horse might be useful. He trotted instead to the ranks of the horsemen. Thalen addressed the first mounted Free Stater he saw, resplendent with his striped neck drape, showing his regiment and equipped with lance and sword.
Here's an extra horse for you.
Hey, that's Warth's mare,
the man said.
Where'd you get it?
She was racing back to Sutterdam.
Look at her side. She's totally knackered. Give her here anyway. I'll take her to the reserves.
Thalen slid off the mare and handed her reins to the outstretched hand.
Where's the volunteer infantry? Thalen asked.
Massing over that way.
The man pointed. Thalen walked over to the crowd of people, mostly men, but a few women too. Officers yelled at them to form straight lines and divided them into three sections. Thalen found himself in the right-hand group, several lines deep, but he didn't know if this position was favourable or unfavourable. Anxiously looking around for anyone he knew, he craned his neck in all directions. Hake should be back in the quartermaster tents behind him, but he saw no sign of stretcher bearers or his father. Occasionally, the wind brought him a noise that sounded like Harthen's laugh, and then he felt a desperate longing to see his brother. Thalen rose on his toes to survey the length of the field. Many of the hillside archers had thrown away their worthless crossbows, pulled daggers, swords, or axes, and run down the hill to join these ranks of ragged infantrymen. A Free States officer, who looked like an old schoolmate of Thalen's from Sutterdam's upper academy, shouted orders at the foot soldiers no one really heeded. They all waited anxiously, silently, as the sun rose hotter. Water boys passed through the lines. No one had any idea of what they were waiting for. Thalen wondered what the Free States generals were doing. He hoped they had some grand strategy in mind, but from his experience at the assembly, he thought it was more likely that they were spending these hours arguing with one another. Harvin's laughter wafted from somewhere closer by. Thalen stood on his toes, waved his hands and shouted, "Harvin! Harvin! I'm here!" Harvin rode up, looking comfortable, even relaxed on his bay.
"So, Middle, you've come to join us too. I'm glad you won't miss this glorious day. Hey, tie your neck drape around your head so I can spot you better.
Don't fret, I'll keep an eye on you."
Phelan opened his mouth to answer, but someone shouted, "Captain, we need you," and Harvin rode off. Seeing Thalen rearrange his drape gave the men around him ideas. Some wrapped their long scarves around their middles as a pitiful attempt at padding. Laughing, a few stuffed them down the front of their trousers to protect their tenderest spot. Standing around made Thalen's legs ache, and he wished he had something to eat. He wiped the sweat out of his eyebrows. If he were home in Lantern Lane right now, his tetter might be fixing him fast break. He could take off these boots and put his feet up. He could take a nap and have a wash. Thalen's mind drifted away from his uncomfortable surroundings. A slow drum cadence rolled across the field, and the Oro pikemen marched a few paces forward in formation.
"Don't be baited," Thalen mentally addressed the Free States general. "We could take advantage of the high ground. Back us up the hill and use it."
But he held small hope regarding command's sagacity. After all the time waiting, Thalen thought he'd be relieved when the Free States horns blew. But when they finally sounded, his first thought was, "No, not yet. I'm not ready to die." The remaining Free States archers let loose volleys of shots. Thalen couldn't tell how much damage they inflicted. When the arrows started to thin, the cavalry began its assault, levelling its lances with a roar of hoofbeats and shouts. A few moments later, officers bellowed to the infantrymen, "Draw and advance! Forward!" The foot soldiers started at a brisk walk. The man next to Thalen started a rhythmic chant of, "No, no, 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 no." Once they forded the little stream, their officers screamed, "Charge!" Like the men around him, Thalen started to run. Ahead, he saw a swirl of indecipherable chaos of horses veering, bodies falling, and metal flashing. The noise all around was equal uproar, but somehow Thalen's mind closed out all sound and focused all his attention on his vision. An Oro protector appeared in his field of view with his back to Thalen, intent on thrusting his pike at an unhorsed cavalryman prone on the ground. Thalen raised his sword over his own head, two-handed, and brought it down on the back of the Oro's unprotected neck. He whirled because he sensed movement. An Oro mounted on an ox and thundered at him, intending to ride him down. Thalen sucked his body away from a sword that reached to stab him, awkwardly slashing upward and perhaps wounding his assailant's underarm. The Oro turned his animal back at Thalen. Desperately, Thalen dodged the wicked horn and thrust his sword deep into the oxen's haunch. His cheap sword broke off at the hilt. But the animal went berserk from the pain, bellowing and kicking, carrying the enemy rider away. Thalen grabbed a breath and desperately searched the ground for a weapon. He dived for a blood-slick sword next to a man's body. When he stood up, he found himself in the midst of a group of Oros, all of whom at that particular instant were engaged in attacking other Free Staters. He tried to help a countryman with a wild slash at an Oro's leg, only to miss his objective completely and stumble from his own momentum. Thalen could recognise Harvin's laugh in the midst of a windstorm. Against all odds, his brother shouted, "Thalen, hang on, I'm coming!" Harthen's well-trained mount cleaved through the chaos, and Harthen reached his free arm down. Desperate, Thalen grabbed it, jumped, and awkwardly landed on his belly on the rump of Harthen's horse.
Middle, you need practice at that!
Harthen smoothly parried a blow with a deafening clang, and then thrust his lance into the man's exposed throat, while Thalen pulled himself into a seated position, dropping the sword he'd just picked up, but managing to cling fast to his brother's waist.
Harthen shone with a kind of light, full of the joy of battle.
Several Free States cavalry wearing similar colours formed up around their dashing captain with practised precision, and together they turned their horses to face a phalanx of approaching pikemen.
"Here we go!" shouted Harthen with glee.
Thalen, bumping along as worthless baggage, watched in awe as the cavalrymen managed to rout that group of Oros by breaking their formation, wheeling back and using their height, lances and swords to scatter the enemy. Harthen had dropped his reins. He guided the horse with his knees. His horse veered around a tall man in its path, waving metal. Harthen cleaved the stick of a halberd coming at his right side from another foe. This left the middle of his body open, and in that instant, a pike struck Harthen smack in the chest.
The impact of the blow transferred from Harthen to Thalen, as his brother shuddered once, violently. Harthen's horse reared, and Thalen slipped backward off the horse's hindquarters. He chased the horse a few steps and reached up to pull down Harthen's slumped form. Bright red blood already saturated his brother's shirt and burbled from his still smiling lips. Thalen tried to say something, but nothing came out of his throat. Thalen knelt, holding his baby brother, his thoughts a swirl.
"The pike broke the ribs, went straight through your body. And almost into mine. How could you be so alive one moment and now only this? Wait. Where are you? I want you back. Is it my fault? So much blood. Youngest, I want you back. You saved my life. Did you suffer? Do you even know I'm here?"
Thalen still knelt, holding Harthen's body, when a leaping horse accidentally kicked him in the head and sent him sprawling face down in the mud. Thalen braced his hands into the ground to lever himself up, but found his body would not obey.
"I'm not that hurt," his mind said to him. "I am in shock. I read about that. I'll just lie here a minute and collect my wits."
Apparently, the Oro lines had moved forward, because the battle sounded as if it swirled right on top of him, deafening horses' screams and human grunts and the sound of metal hitting metal.
Above the confused sounds, Thalen heard a strange melodic noise. He thought he hallucinated. Hooves and boots trod on Thalen several times, which vaguely hurt, but still his body refused to move.
His mind drifted. When had he last slept? He was so tired. So very, very tired. The muddy field felt so soft and warm with blood.
Thalen re-entered consciousness with a jerk. Laboriously, he pushed up on his knees. The sun had crept over to late afternoon. He had a knot on the back of his head and bruises everywhere else. Otherwise, he seemed to be alive and intact, though parched. The water skin slung over his shoulder held enough for him to take a long drink, and he used the last handful to make a pass at the mud on his face.
"Harthen."
Thalen looked around in a panic, realising that he knelt in a tangled sea of broken things like smashed poles, bits of armour, arrows and broken bodies.
The churned up mud had splashed everything, Harvin had been right next to him, but either he or his brother had moved some paces when the battle washed over them.
Must I find his body? I know he's dead.
He spotted a nearby pike. He used it as support to help him gain his feet and look around. The field, with the battle long over at present, contained only thousands of intermixed dead and wounded. In the distance, two squads of white-haired soldiers combed the pasture, occasionally reaching down. Thalen dropped back to his belly and started crawling over the bodies, some of which moaned or reached for him. The Scholarium student would have stopped to help a wounded stranger, friend or foe.
But the man who'd awoken on the battlefield was more single-minded.
I can't help you. I can't stop. I still have one brother. I have to find Hake.
When he got a little farther away from watchful Oros, he risked a running crouch. He ran to the supply tent in the rear of the battleground that he had seen earlier. The tent's canvas had been rent and some of its poles broken.
Chairs and tables lay overturned and snapped. Corpses, already stinking, buzzing with flies, littered the dirt floor. In the dim light, Thalen could not read the uniform splattered with blood, and he didn't trust himself to recognise Hake by his stature. He began methodically studying each face, turning over men sprawled on their bellies, not him, and forcing himself even to pick up heads detached from their necks, not him.
Thalen found Hake half under a table near the rear of the tent. He lay quite still, with his eyes open and unfocused.
Crouching on his heels, Thalen stared at him in dismay.
Then Hake blinked. "Hake," Thalen whispered. "Hake, I'm here. Where are you hurt?" Hake turned his gaze and recognised him.
"Hey,"
he croaked in a dry voice.
"Thalen, is it really you? Am I dreaming? I've been waiting all day for those bastards to come and cut my throat. Better for you to do it.
Where are you hurt?"
"I can't move or feel below my waist."
"I've got to get you out of here," Thalen said.
"Leave me. I'm done for. Vigar is done for. Mater and Pater.
Mater would skin me if I left you. The scavenging crew is far away. I'm going to get you out of here."
Thalen pulled Hake out from under the table and, with difficulty, hoisted him over his shoulder. As he left the supply tent, they passed the entrance to the healer's tent. Thalen peered in at the bodies and gore.
"Anyone alive? Anyone able to walk?" Thalen called softly.
"Wait for me!"
came a muffled voice. One of the piles of corpses started to move, and a stab of terror hit Thalen. But a young lad emerged, not a ghost.
For a second, Thalen thought he might be one of the twins from the ferry, and his heart leapt. But a second glance proved him wrong. This scrawny youngster wore ill-fitting patched clothes with his hair cropped to his skull. He sported a bandage wrapped around his chest and left shoulder.
"I can walk," said the lad. "Just hiding to escape notice. Where to, Captain?"
"Away from here. Grab one of those swords, some rolls of bandages and a water skin."
Creeping round behind the tents, the three made their way into the tree line. Back towards Sutterdam was the only direction that made sense to Thalen. There he could find help, healers and food. He could try to hide Hake with Mater. He would heal under her care.
Thalen led them to the right of the road he had trotted down on the white mare so many eons ago.
Now he had to climb the hill carrying a heavy burden, and it had grown so very steep. Thalen staggered and panted under the weight. He stopped to pull off his bloody neck drape and make a cushion on his shoulder. Hake made no protest, no matter how much Thalen jostled him. Once they crested the hill, they paused to catch their breath, and the lad squirted water in Thalen's mouth.
"My name's Tristo," he said, "from Yasta. Came down here on a fishing boat with my mates to help hold off them invaders. They gave me one of those newfangled crossbows and placed me in the woods, but when I goes to fire it, bam, it bites me back. My mate brought me to the healer's tent, and the man says, 'You're my first patient. You've broken collarbone, laddie. War's over for you.' Gave me milk of the poppy. I fell asleep, nice as you please, and the next thing I know, damn oros were crashing through the tent, running through the healers and everyone. I crawled under some poor fellas to hide," Hake spoke.
"Smart thinking, Tristo. I sat in the supply tent, doling out our last weapons, when Orox came smashing through. One caught its horn on my waistcoat and then shook me off like a pest. I guess when I landed, I broke my spine."
Tristo and Hake shook heads.
Thalen said, "Keep your voices soft. Tristo, I'll watch for it. You keep a lookout behind."
"Yeah, we don't want to get captured now," the boy agreed.
Thalen switched Hake to his other shoulder and cautiously led the way. They walked downhill for a while, and then their path flattened. They had covered more than half a league when Thalen's strength completely gave out and he staggered. He led them into sparse cover and tried to set Hake down gently. They all drank a little more from Tristo's water skin.
"Someone's coming," warned Tristo.
Over the rush of blood pounding in his ears, Thalen also detected the rustle in the brush. He grabbed the sword and struggled to his feet. A man appeared out of the thin undergrowth. His wrinkled, dark brown face showed he was middle-aged, but he looked fit. He wore a splattered Free States uniform of tan and silver, a neck drape of silver and maroon, and boasted impressively thick mutton chop sideburns. He dragged a stretcher bed on which lay an unconscious Free State soldier whose leg was covered in a repurposed scarf, now sopping with blood. The older soldier paid no attention at all to Thalen's sword. He slowly set the litter down and wiped the sweat from his forehead with the back of his sleeve.
"Been hoping to find more survivors. Set off hours ago. Seen many folks caught and trussed up, taken as slaves, I figure. But no one else free. Got to be more of a scattered around. The enemy failed to set up a perimeter."
Hake introduced their threesome. The soldier was Sergeant Kodek from Jigat. He did not know the name of the man on the litter.
"Well, now we are five," Thalen said. "And we might pick up a few more. What do you suggest? I know there's a stream not too far ahead. I thought maybe to hole up near it."
"That's as good a plan as any," said the sergeant.
He suggested that he and Thalen exchange burdens so as to use different muscles. So Kodek hoisted up Hake, while Thalen grabbed the litter handles. Tristo managed to hold up the end of the stretcher for a short distance, and they covered ground more quickly, but when Tristo's face twisted with pain, Thalen made him let the back end of the stretcher drag. Just when none of them could manage to lurch another step, they reached the stream. Tristo wandered a little ways upstream and Kodek a ways down, scouting for a place to hide. Tristo returned soonest.
"I spotted a shed just yonder, like for animals, with straw."
When Kodek rejoined them, they set out for it. Before they took the comatose soldier into the shed, however, Thalen insisted on taking off his bandage and washing the wounded leg thoroughly in the cold water. In the shed, he rebandaged it tightly in clean bandages. He sent Tristo to clean his collarbone, too. Finally, Thalen scrubbed the mud off himself, cleaned his various nicks and the knot on his head, rinsed out his drape, and let the freezing water numb his bruises.
"I will take the first watch,"
offered Kodek. The others sank down in the straw. Thalen expected he might be too distraught to sleep, but exhaustion won out. When Kodek shook Thalen awake, night surrounded the shed. The sergeant whispered,
"I hear voices back by the stream. I'm going to check. You watch here."
Thalen grabbed the sword. To reassure himself, he placed his palm just above chests to make sure the wounded was still alive. After a few minutes of waiting, Kodek returned with three more people, a scout with a broken arm and a cut in his calf who introduced himself as Warith, an older citizen volunteer, Ikas, who murmured he worked as a wheelwright by trade, and a woman healer named Dwinny. Thalen took the next watch and let the others collapse in the straw.
He watched the sun rise over the pasture mockingly, as if it were just another day.